Today is the celebration of the appearance in this world of Advaita Acharya Prabhu. Advaitam Harinadvaita Acharyam Bhakti Sangshanat. It's described in Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita. He's called an Acharya because he preached bhakti. An Acharya means Achinoti Ashastrani Acharya Sangstapyatapi Swayam Acharyate Yasmad Acharyam Tena Kirtitaha. An Acharya means one who acts according to Shastra, preaches according to Shastra, and establishes the purport of Shastra. So, today I want to speak something connected to the topic of Acharya. I'm going to read from Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita a verse in the chapter which describes Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's discussing with Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, and Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu disabusing Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya of his misconception that the absolute truth is ultimately impersonal. So, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya put many arguments, and in reply, I'm reading Madhya Lila of Chaitanya Charitamrita, chapter 6, text 177, with the translation and commentary by Srila Prabhupada. And this in what Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya said is summed up in a few words, and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's reply is summed up in a few words. So, Yutanda chal nigraha adi anek uthailo shab kandi prabhu nijamat sheshthapilo. The Bhattacharya presented various types of false arguments with pseudo-logic and tried to defeat his opponent in many ways. However, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu refuted all these arguments and established his own conviction. Purport: the word vitanda indicates that a debater not touching the main point or establishing his own point simply tries to refute the other person's argument. When one does not touch the direct meaning but tries to divert attention by misinterpretation, he engages in chal. This word is well known in Indian languages, right? Chal. But it has a specific meaning in debate. Generally it means like some kind of trickery, doesn't it? Like that trickery or cheating. But this, that meaning is there, but specifically it means one tries to divert attention by misinterpretation. So that's the meaning according to Nyaya Shastra, or the science of logic. The word nigraha also means always trying to refute the arguments of the other party. Now, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu defeated Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya and established the absolute truth that Krishna is the supreme personality of Godhead. Now, this Mayavad that Sarvabhauma was attempting to establish, we find here vitanda, chal, nigraha adi. The Bhattacharya was attempting to establish Mayavad by various devious means of argumentation. In other words, he wasn't really interested in understanding the truth. He had a position which he wanted to uphold by any means. In a debate, it's very difficult to debate with someone. You may have had this experience. If they're not really interested in understanding the point or trying to arrive at the truth, but they just want to establish their point. And then, okay. If it's still there. Therefore we find that the Vaishnava Acharyas, because this Mayavad, it sounds tenable. It sounds like, we're all spirit, we're all God. Actually, it doesn't sound tenable, but to people of perverted consciousness, it sounds as tenable. I'm God. That sounds right. People are in this world because they're foolish. And they are mokasha moga karmano moga jnana vichetasa rakshasim asurim chaiva prakritim mohinim shritaha. They are attracted to demoniac and atheistic views, and as a result, all their supposedly pious activities, everything is it's just defeated. All their attempts by karma or jnana, they simply take refuge of demoniac viewpoints. So, because it sounds attractive, but it actually deviates people very seriously from the act, by taking the Shastra and giving the wrong understanding, they deviate people from the gift that the Shastra has to give us, which is Krishna consciousness. Or they may even give something which appears to be Krishna consciousness. They also talk about bhakti. Mayavadis also talk about bhakti, but their understanding is such that we won't ever get bhakti. So therefore, because it is widespread, and because it deviates people from bhakti, therefore our Vaishnava Acharyas, they preach against this thing. Now, we have, in the modern Vaishnava world, various forms of deviation from the pure Siddhanta. There are always different kinds of misinterpretations, malinterpretations. That's one reason why we need Acharyas, we turn out Advaita Acharya, because the envy of Krishna becomes represented in the world in various forms, in various times, places and circumstances. Actually, there are not that many different genres or types of theories, but they become represented in different places. Just like there was a time when India was dominated by Buddhism. Now it's not. So we don't preach very much against Buddhism at the present time, because it's not misleading many people. In the West it is more, but not very much in India at the present time. It's not a major philosophical challenge. But we find that there was a time when it was very strong, and actually the work of defeating it was mostly done by Shankaracharya and the Mayavadis, but at the same time they brought up something else bogus. So they did something good, but then they brought something in which was covered Buddhism. So the philosophical challenge is always there, and of course we can always just ignore it and say, let's just chant Hare Krishna, and why bother, we'll just chant. And why bother with all that? Well, we should be bothered because other people are being misled, and we ourselves may be, because if we don't try to understand Siddhanta, then Siddhanta alashjan anartha to charena. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said that those who are lazy in the matter of understanding Siddhanta, they cannot overcome anarthas. We might think that we're doing bhakti, but because we don't have a clear conception, then we have a misconception. So anyway, I'm just saying all these things as an introduction, because I want to speak about a misconception which is quite prominent in the ISKCON world, or the at the present time, and particularly in Bangalore, and it's particularly crucial at this time, and that is called Ritvikism or Ritvikvad. Now, I'm not going to go through all the different points that they've made, because it's quite a big thing, but it is important that we discuss it, because although I would guess that all of you here tonight, or maybe most of you, are not inclined toward that, but the reason that we may not be inclined toward it may be just because what is described here in Chaitanya Charitamrita as Sampradaya Anurodha. When Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was discussing with another group of Mayavadis, not Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, with Prakashananda and his 60,000 followers, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu defeated all their arguments, and they said, well, actually you're right, and actually this Mayavada is a bunch of rubbish, we have to admit it, but we just follow it because it's our sampradaya. So many people are like that. People, they join the Ritvik camp and they follow it. They become supporters of Ritvik. We shouldn't say Ritvik Vad is a bit more accurate to describe, an more accurate description of an inaccuracy. So most it's just like who you happen to associate with, or it's just, you know, we don't go very deeply into the issue, but we just, you know, all right, I'm in this line and it's okay, and therefore it must be right because I'm in it. So it's, most people are like that. If you're born in a Christian family, most Christians are Christians, how? They're not converted, but because they're born in Christian families, at least outside India, maybe in India it's run the other way. But it's just because you're just familiar with something and therefore you think it's right and you don't really want to think about the issues. Which is maybe alright for yourself, but you won't be able to convince others. And you may be swayed by, if you come in contact with a powerful preacher of the opposing party, then you may be swayed by their arguments. You may say, well, how can there be a powerful preacher of a philosophy which is wrong? Well, Buddha was a powerful preacher. Shankaracharya was a powerful preacher. He convinced many people. And Ritvikism has convinced many people. We all agree here that Ritvikism is wrong, but we should examine what's wrong with it, lest we be misled by that. Actually, as I was just saying, that people, they tend to follow that, if they're brought into the semblance of Krishna consciousness through Ritvikism, they tend to follow that. Well, that just proves the point, actually, that everyone has a guru or everyone has an acharya. Because it's not that by reading Prabhupada's books, anyone ever became a Ritvikvadi, because you'd never get any idea about this by reading Prabhupada's books. But because they've come in contact with people who are espousing this, who are convinced about this, therefore they think it's right. So I'll talk about that more anyway. First, like I say, I'm not going to get into it in great depth, but recently I saw this magazine called Back to Prabhupada. You've probably all seen it because it's widely circulated. And there are some points in there which I'll respond to here. I'm not giving a systematic philosophical thesis, but there are some points we should respond to. First of all, the history of Ritvikism, I'll recount in brief. No one had ever dreamed of such a thing until several years after Srila Prabhupada left this world. While Prabhupada was here, there was absolutely no idea of any such theory. There were serious problems in ISKCON shortly after. Serious problems started to emerge with devotees who had assumed the role of gurus, or those who had taken the service of initiating. And then one of my godbrothers, called Rupa Vilas Prabhu, he invented this theory based on some words in Srila Prabhupada's, one of Srila Prabhupada's conversations. He suggested this as a solution to ISKCON problems. Rupa Vilas Prabhu, actually, he's my friend. He's given up this. The original founder of Ritvik theory has now rejected it. And he gave the first idea, but shortly after making this theory, sorry to say, he ran off with his best friend's wife. They're both disciples of Srila Prabhupada also. So he didn't seem to get much spiritual strength from that. I'm not saying that to criticize him for that point, but I'm just saying that it didn't seem to help him very much in his spiritual life. And he admits he's made serious mistakes. So anyway, this theory was later, which was given in a seed form, was later refined and developed by a person called Krishnakant Desai. And as far as I understand, this final order, which is the like the Bible of Ritvikism, TFO, that was written by Krishnakant Desai, and this Back to Prabhupada magazine, I believe it's all written by him, or mostly written by him, or by his followers. Call them disciples, if you like. But he speaks with great certitude, just like an acharya. This is it. This is the way. Everything else is wrong. But similarly for him, his own spiritual standard, there's nothing outstanding to show. Some years ago, some proponents of Ritvikvad brought him to Alachua as the star to Alachua is a community of ISKCON Grihastha devotees. There's several hundred families in Florida, in USA. So he was brought there by proponents of Ritvikvad, and he was supposed to, because he's quite expert in debate, in Vitanda, Chal, Nigraha, all these kind of things. He has good intelligence, no doubt. So they brought him there, but then they withdrew him because he was an embarrassment. This is what I heard. Because he was never seen before 7 o'clock in the morning. He's not a Mangalati man. And he would come to the temple unbathed, wearing yesterday's shorts, and the same. So he wasn't a very good advertisement for his theory. He didn't. I mean, his own standard of spiritual practice is not something that you'd want to follow. So that very briefly is an introduction to the history of this. Now, in this magazine, the latest one I saw, their main point they're making is that ISKCON gurus contradict themselves, and they call what KKD has called the bait and switch policy. They say, they quote ISKCON gurus as saying that, well, actually I cannot bring you to Krishna, I'll bring you to Prabhupada and he will bring you to Krishna. They quote, and then they'll quote another quote from the same guru saying that it is my duty to bring you to Krishna, or something like this. I'm paraphrasing. So in this way they call this that you pretend that you're very humble and you're actually taking people to Prabhupada, and then you assume a role of an absolute acharya. And in this way you cheat people. This is what they call it. But actually, every guru says that. He says that every guru, no guru is going to say that I am the way, the truth, and the light, and no one comes to God but through me. To quote Jesus Christ. He's quoted as having said this. Every guru will present that I am simply a servant of my guru, and I'm taking you to him. And by his mercy, you will go back to Godhead, and by his mercy, I'm able to bring you, and although intrinsically I have no quality, any Vaishnava will speak like this, I am ordered by my guru to preach and guide people on the same path that my guru guided me on. So actually there's not really an issue, because the Ritvikvadis say that no one should initiate, only Prabhupada is initiating. Because only Prabhupada is qualified to deliver anyone. But no one, including Prabhupada, says that I am the deliverer. It's when we say a guru, what does it mean? By his mercy you'll be delivered to Krishna. But that is Krishna Kripa Shri Murti. His divine grace we call Krishna Kripa Shri Murti. The mercy is actually Krishna's mercy. Samsara dava nala yudhaloka tranaya karanya dhana dhana bam praptasya kalyana gunan labhasya bandeka roshi charanaravinda. We worship the guru who he's showering Krishna's mercy. Krishna is like an ocean of mercy, and the guru is like the cloud who takes that mercy and showers it on the people of the world who are suffering in the burning forest fire of material life. So ultimately, the mercy is Krishna's mercy, which is received through parampara, and every guru will say that, yeah, if you follow what I say, you will go to Krishna. I can guide you to come to Krishna. But how am I doing that? Through the parampara. I'll take you to my guru, and then he takes you to his guru, and like this. The mercy comes down, and we bring people in and offer them up. So, there's actually no difference between what they say and what we say. The only difference is that the Ritvikvadis want to bottle up the mercy and say that it's stopped with Prabhupada, and no one else can distribute that mercy. No one else has any mercy to offer. But the mercy that the gurus in ISKCON today offer is that, yes, we will train you, we'll teach you according to what Srila Prabhupada said, and take you to Prabhupada, and he will deliver you. And how will Prabhupada deliver you? He will take you to his guru. Like that. So, yeah, they call themselves the Prabhupada Nugas, as if this is the real way to follow Prabhupada, as if they have a monopoly on Prabhupada. Because we only believe in Prabhupada, we don't believe in anyone else. But in this, the gurus in this conversation will say, I initiate on behalf of Prabhupada. That's what, and they're criticizing that. You say, you're initiating on behalf of Prabhupada. What else should we say when we initiate? Otherwise we become something like Sai Baba. I'm initiating on my own strength. I don't have any, I don't need anyone else's mercy. It's just me. Me and Krishna. That's Mayavada. I'm nothing in relation to, compared to Prabhupada. Every guru is going to say that, and we should feel that. And actually, Srila Prabhupada is extraordinarily special. There's no doubt. Even among gurus, he's extraordinarily special. About Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said that devotees of his stature, hardly a few will appear in the whole day of Lord Brahma. So devotees of Prabhupada's stature are very rare, and it's unreasonable or unrealistic, let's say, to expect that every guru will be like Prabhupada in every respect, but the point is that if one faithfully represents what Prabhupada says and does, then the same mercy comes. Prabhupada's mercy is not bottled up. So, the main point is that the Ritvikvadis deny that mercy can still flow. They say, well, you have to directly connect with Prabhupada. So it's just like, I'm a disciple of Srila Prabhupada, I'm also a disciple of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati. I'm also a disciple of Gaurakishore Das Babaji, because when you become initiated, you become a disciple of all the gurus, but we have our specific connection also. And Prabhupada, even when he was personally present, he would direct some of his disciples. He often did that you work under this leader, you work under that leader. So, by denying that anyone is qualified to be a guru, which is their main contention, after Prabhupada, no one's capable of being a guru, then what they're saying is that Prabhupada was incapable of empowering anyone. Could you please turn off your cell phones? Oh, actually, I have a new system. It's called a 300 rupee fine. Okay, I didn't warn you. Next cell phone goes off, take 300 rupees, put it in the hundi. And if it goes off again, take their cell phone and put it in the hundi. No, it really is, you know, you should have some sense that we've come here to hear something for our benefit. And why disturb everyone with this? Just turn it off, please. So, and although they call themselves Prabhupada Anugas, they don't do what Prabhupada did, which was glorify Krishna and speak Bhagavad Gita. They don't even glorify Prabhupada. Their main business is to point out the faults, real and imagined. I'm not saying there aren't any faults, but the real and imagined faults of everyone who's... Okay, 300 rupee fine. Get it. You were warned. Please put it in the box or go away. Okay, another one. 600 rupees for the deities. Who's going to do that? Who's going to take that? No? You all want to have your cell phones going off throughout the whole lecture? If you think listening to your cell phone is more important, then I just go away. That's all. Take the fine, seriously. Otherwise they won't stop. It'll just go on and on and on. Huh? What is it? Whatever it is.
Give it the mobile, not the fine. And won't they take mobile?
Yeah.
That's the fine.
Okay, take the mobile, and when you get 300 rupees, give it back. Maybe they'll point out my faults. I'll be in the back to Prabhupada magazine for oppressing the devotees. So the main thing they're doing in their magazine is just finding faults with Vaishnavas. They're more concerned with that than in glorifying Krishna, which is what Prabhupada did. So how anyone can benefit from that, I don't know, because benefit comes from glorifying Krishna and glorifying his devotees. Not from simply saying this is wrong, that is wrong. So we don't find it very spiritual that the whole thing is just criticism. They claim that the GBC speaks contradictorily. Well, it may be like that, apparently. You can say that about Prabhupada also. Prabhupada sometimes said one thing and sometimes he said something else. Just like in the beginning, Srila Prabhupada told his disciples, his first disciples, to put their japa beads around their neck. Later on, he told them you should always keep it in a bead bag. It's contradictory, right? What about Krishna in Bhagavad Gita? He says, sambhavitasya chakirti maranadati richate. Dishonor is worse than death for a respectable person. Then later on, he talks about nityadvam samachittadvam. One should always be situated in equanimity. And he speaks of the self-realized person. Tatamana pamana yoho. He's the same in honor or dishonor. So Krishna himself, if you take it at face value, without trying to understand the point deeply, actually I gave a whole lecture on this particular point yesterday, about this apparent contradiction in Bhagavad Gita, then Krishna himself contradicts himself. So how are we going to understand this point that Krishna, in the Bhagavad Gita, which is the book in which he explains the highest truth, which we all have to understand to attain the highest spiritual platform, he contradicts himself. How do we understand that? We can't understand it without the help of a guru. The acharyas explain Shastra. So, contradictions may appear to be there. And actually that's in any complex subject. Just like you've all learned at school that there is no square root of a negative integer, right? It's not possible, right? Because if you multiply two minus and minus one times minus one equals plus one. Two minuses make a plus. So that's an axiom of mathematics. But at a higher level, the square root of minus one is required for solving various problems. So I've heard. I don't know it, the mathematics myself. But what is true at one level, at another level, that truth no longer applies. It's not that it's not true, but it's true in a certain context. It's true from a certain perspective, and that perspective is not incorrect, but it's not the whole picture. So contradiction, what appears to be a contradiction, may not necessarily be a fault. It may just be that the person who's pointing out the contradiction as a fault, they simply don't have enough knowledge to understand what's going on. They don't understand the complexities. A child at school, when he hears a mathematics professor talking about the square root of minus one, may laugh at him and say, "Oh, I'm 8 years old and I studied, maybe you have to be a little bit older, maybe 10 years old. It's not possible to have the square root of minus one. He's supposed to be a mathematics professor, he doesn't know anything." So he thinks he's right. And from his platform of understanding, it is right. And you probably better not even try to instruct him in that level, because he's just not ready for it. But if he's the children, they're also trained to be respectful to the professors. And not only children, but all of us. How many subjects can we know? So if we meet a professor of some subject, we can accept that they have some knowledge which we don't have, and their understanding of it is better, at least theoretically. If we meet are there any professors of mathematics here, or PhDs? No. So if you meet someone and if we see two professors discussing among themselves about various problems in calculus, we may not understand it. To us it may sound like a bunch of gibberish, But they understand what they're talking about. And if we don't understand, we shouldn't mock them. So spiritual matters, they sometimes may appear contradictory, but that can be, the contradiction can be understood, the apparent contradiction can be understood, but it can be understood by someone who is faithful. They have faith that just like if you see the professor of mathematics, if you think they're just some idiot talking a bunch of rubbish, talking about all these sines and cosines and what's that? I never heard of that. They're just talking some rubbish, that's all. Because we don't understand, then we think that they're fools. But actually we are foolish. So we should have the humility to accept that they understand things that I don't understand. And if I submit to them and try to understand, they can gradually instruct me, and I can understand. So in spiritual life also, to understand the complexities of various subjects requires mercy. And one has to be humble and submissive to accept that mercy. By challenging, one cannot understand. Srila Prabhupada was sometimes extremely heavy with persons who approached him in a challenging spirit. For instance, one hippie in Delhi, in a public program with thousands of people, spoke to Prabhupada in a challenging way. Prabhupada called him on this stage and Prabhupada engaged in a shouting match with him. Just to make the point that you cannot, it is not the way to approach. Prabhupada was shouting at him, "You listen to me. You cannot understand anything by challenging." So that's actually a fact. Now, this doesn't mean that we should be just foolish and accept anything. We have to be intelligent also, because if we just accept anyone as a guide, we're going to be in trouble. We have to use our intelligence also. But we cannot understand everything simply by logic. And you'll find in that Back to Prabhupada magazine, it all appears very logical, but we don't find any bhakti there. There's nothing which appeals to our heart. So bhakti is not all logic and it's not all sentiment. Religion without philosophy is sentiment or fanaticism, and philosophy without religion is simply mental speculation. And particularly this point of Guru Tattva is very difficult to understand. Jiva Goswami says that Shiva Tattva and Guru Tattva, they're both very difficult to understand. Why is that? Because both Lord Shiva and the Guru, they have this in common, that they are considered non-different from God and different from Him also. So how do we understand that? How can you be non-different and different from Him at the same time? So the attempt to understand it simply by logic, then we have to pull in, I was reading these words, Vitanda, Chal, all these different techniques by which we try to establish our point as being correct. But we cannot understand the truth simply by logic. Now, if you think about it, you see the wicked bodies will criticize. You see, this guru has this fault, and that guru has that fault. And if you look, you may see that. Oh, they're right. They're pointing out some fault, you see. You may see. But if you consider the whole idea, if you consider logically, the whole idea of a guru being as good as God is illogical. How can a man be as good as God? One can only be a guru if he preaches that God and everyone else is different. But then he says, well, actually, the guru is as good as God. I think, I see, he's cheating me. He's saying that all of you are not as good as God, but I am. And actually, many gurus do cheat like this, so-called gurus. But it is something you can doubt, because just like Srila Prabhupada's own family members, they never appreciate his position as a world acharya, because to him he was, you know, their husband, their jamai or whatever, their father. He's just, you know, he's our father. You know, he comes home and we say he eats, he sleeps, and passes stool and gets sick. And he says, you know, we know him. He's a person like you and me. In the winter he gets a cold, and in the summer he gets heat rash. And how can you say he's God? You know, we know him. Sometimes he jokes, sometimes he laughs, sometimes he gets angry. So how can you say that he's as good as God when obviously he's under the influence of material nature in the same way as everyone else is? He may be a good person, but he's influenced by material nature. Just like you see, Prabhupada himself, he got heat stroke in Delhi, and he went to a doctor for an operation in London once. So how can you say he's as good? He's a person who's under the influence of material nature. This is the logical approach. Bhagavan Sri Krishna, who we are attempting to approach through Srila Prabhupada and through the Parampara, he says, Acharyam mam vijaniyan navamanyeta karhichit namartya bhudhyasuyeta sarva deva maya guru. He says, don't think like that. He says, the guru is as good as me. Why does the guru preach that the guru is as good as God? Because that's what Krishna says. And the guru's business is to repeat what Krishna says. As Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said, when teaching the Bhagavatam to his disciples, when he comes to this verse, should the guru not say what Krishna says? Should he instead change it and say, get out a whip and whip the guru? No, Krishna says you should understand him to be as good as me, and he should not be disrespected in any way. He should never be considered as an ordinary mortal person. This is what Krishna says. And the guru is the sum and substance of all the demigods. And actually, the guru is, the Vaishnava guru is even more important than the demigods. Inasmuch as they both accept worship, but the guru only does so to direct that worship to Krishna. Whereas the demigods, they accept as if they were independent gods. So actually, it's better to worship a Vaishnava guru than to worship demigods. And I'm saying that, and I am a Vaishnava guru. I shouldn't think like that. I shouldn't think that I'm a guru. Amito Vaishnava e buddhi hoile amani na hobavami. Pratishtasha ashi hridoi dushile hoivo niroi gami. Taishishya tava takya sarvada naloivo puja ka. Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, if I think that I'm a Vaishnava, I will become puffed up, my mind will become contaminated, I'll go to hell. Therefore, he says, I will always remain as a disciple and never accept the worship of anyone. I'll never be a guru to anyone. Bhaktivinoda Thakur. He also had disciples. So, a guru never says he's a guru, but I'm saying that in as much as at least, yeah, I'm taking the position in the service of Srila Prabhupada, I'm saying that, and I'm saying the position of the guru is better than that of even the demigod. So he was just cheating. But why? Well, I can say, I'd much rather be in this body, which is, it's, you know, it's a Kali Yuga body. It's not that sick, but it has various sicknesses. Whereas the demigods' bodies, they're all very healthy and strong. And it might appear I'd be better off to be a demigod, but I can say I'm in a better position than a demigod. And if I was offered the position of Indra, I'd rather be doing what I'm doing, because it's much better to be at the lotus feet of Srila Prabhupada than to be an Indra independent of Srila Prabhupada. So the position of the of a Vaishnava guru is speaking philosophically. means speaking according to Shastra, what Krishna says, is a better position than that even of a demigod. So, well, then the objection may come that, yeah, well, that's okay. That applies to Prabhupada and great acharyas. Prabhupada was obviously perfect. He was obviously beyond Maya. He was as good as God. But then people criticized him also. So many people criticized Prabhupada. And although we can clearly say that he is an acharya of an extraordinary stature, but still, not everyone saw him as perfect, not everyone saw him as good as God. And actually this verse, Acharyam Mam Vijaniyam, which Krishna speaks, he's not talking about, specifically about worldwide preaching gurus, but he's actually instructing about the duties of brahmacharis. So the duty of a brahmachari, first thing that Narad Muni says. Krishna is speaking, and he's talking here about the acharya, about the forest guru. In traditional Vedic culture, the rishis were mostly married, not that that's a disqualification. They would live in the forest, close to a village, but in the forest. Close to a village, they'd send their disciples, brahmacharis, for begging, and the people from the village would come for advice to them. So the acharya that Krishna is speaking about when he's instructing Uddhava, that the acharya is as good as me, not to be disrespected in any way, is the forest rishi guru. And of course this applies to all Vaishnava gurus, but the point I'm making is that if people say this verse only applies to the super, maha, mega, parivrajaka, acharya, unless you have at least 10,000 disciples, you're not really anywhere on the map. But that's not what, it doesn't apply only to the great acharyas, but all, according to what Krishna says, all the acharyas are great. Even those who may not be famous, even those whose names may not be recorded in history. So, I make notes. I don't usually make notes. Yeah, so that point then, the Guru Tattva is itself, it's inconceivable. We just have to accept. This is the system that Krishna set up. We may say that, well, what's the need of an acharya nowadays? You see, we're talking about the forest guru, and the gurus used to teach their disciples. There were no books. Everything was done just by speaking. The gurus would learn, or the disciples would learn by hearing, and they would repeat that later on to their own disciples. And this is the way the parampara came down. But in those days, Shastra was taught verbally, but now we have Srila Prabhupada in the form of his books. You got that quote? Got your quotes ready? Okay. And Prabhupada said, I will live forever in my books. So then what do we need a guru for? Because we can just read Prabhupada's books. And Prabhupada said, everything you need to become fully Krishna conscious is in my books. So why not just have Prabhupada as your guru? You can read the books, everything is there. And what do you need a guru for? Well, Prabhupada himself, he wrote books, and there were books written before Prabhupada, and he could have just translated the books, or just Prabhupada could have just translated his own spiritual master's books and distributed them and said, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati is your guru. But he didn't do that. And in this regard, I'd just like to read a question. This is on a morning walk on December the 20th, 1975 in Bombay. An Indian lady says, how does one contact the spiritual master? Through a book, can you contact the spiritual master? Prabhupada replies, no, you have to associate. Prabhupada's disciple, Shyama Sundar, as if Prabhupada, he's saying, as if maybe to clarify or restate the question, maybe thinking that Prabhupada hadn't understood it. Can you associate through a book? She asked Prabhupada. Yes, through books, and also personal. Because when you make a spiritual master, you have got personal touch. Not that in air you make a spiritual master. You make a spiritual master concrete. So the point that one can simply have a book as your guru, well, Prabhupada didn't subscribe to this. This is Sikhism, actually. In Sikhism, they had gurus, right? And then they said, okay, no more gurus, and we just worship Guru Granth Sahib. And that's what they do. They worship the Granth. They don't read it. They're not allowed to read it. Only the gurus are not gurus. They don't call them gurus, but only like the Brahmins, only a few people are allowed to read it, and no one else is allowed to read it. So, the Rigvedic body say, well, you just follow Prabhupada's books. That's all. And then you follow Prabhupada. But, they say you should only have Prabhupada's books. No one else is qualified to write books. No one else should write books. Of course, Prabhupada wanted his disciples to write books. And Prabhupada, he ordered his disciples to write books. And he not only ordered some of his disciples to write books, but he had them published for mass distribution by the BBT. This scientific basis of Krishna consciousness by Srirupa Damodar Maharaj. That was on Prabhupada's order, that was published by the BBT for mass distribution. And then another book that was published in Prabhupada's presence by the BBT was Readings in Vedic Literature by Satsrupa Maharaj. And you'll find if you read Prabhupada's conversations that he gives many instructions to say, you should write a book like this. Things without Krishna don't work. He told Satsrupa Maharaj, write that book. I think it was Bhagavan Prabhu, he told, to write a book, The Solution to All Problems. Krishna Consciousness gives the solution to all problems. To someone else, I think it was Prajapati, he told to write a book called Intellectual Animalism. So Prabhupada wanted his disciples to write books. But the Rigvedic Vadi say, no, only Prabhupada's books. And one other book called The Final Order. Huh? Not written by Prabhupada. No, that's what I'm saying. One other book. And what they're saying in effect, so about not writing books, they say you don't require any guru, only Prabhupada is your guru. So Prabhupada says, if you don't require a guru, then why are you teaching me if you don't require a guru? You don't require a book to study. Then why are you writing a book? Why are you writing a book to convince? And why are you teaching them that there is no need of a guru? That means you want to be guru. All other gurus are useless. And then Dr. Patel says, they'll say that their mind is a part of the Samashti mind. Whatever it may be, I require your help to understand it. Isn't that what they say? That, you see, you only read Prabhupada's books, but you have to read The Final Order to understand actually what Prabhupada meant to say. Because if you read Prabhupada's books, you'll never, ever in a million years get any idea of Rigvedism. So you have to read this book, and then you can understand Prabhupada through this. So through Krishna Kant Desai, who, you know, he can't get himself up in the morning or take a bath, you have to understand Prabhupada. Why are you writing books to convince? And why are you teaching? If I require your help to understand something, that is guru. You see, he's taking the position of a guru and saying, you have to understand Prabhupada like this. So that's how the parampara goes on, and it will go on. How do we understand Prabhupada? Even by reading Prabhupada's books, you may say, everything is Prabhupada in Prabhupada's books. Everything is very clear. Right? If you read Prabhupada's books, everything is very clear. Yeah, okay. But some things, just like I was giving that example of Sambhavitasya Chakirti Maranadati Richate, that dishonor is worse than death. And then later on, tathāmāna apamānayoho, you should be equipoised in honor and dishonor. Now Prabhupada doesn't directly take up this discussion. So there's something you might not understand. It's a detail. But basically Prabhupada's books are very clear, right? So then why do you need someone to explain? Well, the fact is that inevitably, even though Prabhupada's books are very clear, among the disciples of Srila Prabhupada and the sub-disciples, if you believe in such things, there are different opinions of what Prabhupada is saying or how it should be understood. So that's always there. That acharya or spiritual leaders come, they establish a position, and then different people interpret it in different ways. And people say, well, you know, we just accept Prabhupada, we're Prabhupada and we just accept Prabhupada as he is. But that's what everyone says, that they're following Prabhupada as he is. And some people who claim to follow Srila Prabhupada, they say, for instance, that homosexual marriages should be allowed within Vaishnav society. And in fact, it's going on right now. So there's someone who's a follower of Srila Prabhupada, or not some, there's a whole group of people who, citing that everyone is ultimately a spirit soul and the body doesn't matter, so therefore, just like we'll find in Shastra, the statement that there should be no discrimination on the basis of race or caste. So some people say, well, there should be no discrimination on the basis of gender either. And that therefore women and men should have exactly the same roles in human society. It's quite a complex issue because we're dealing here with sadharan dharma, which means the sadharan means ordinary or worldly dharma, and how that interacts with bhakti dharma. So actually it's a fact that in this pure state of the spirit soul, there is no male or female on the mundane platform. And so some people say that, well, alright then why discriminate between Vaishnavas on the basis of gender? And women should have the same roles as men. But others who also claim to be followers of Srila Prabhupada, they say that, well, wait a minute, Prabhupada himself personally teaches about the role of women. There's a difference according to the body, according to the psychological nature, and because of the sexual attraction, which has to be overcome, then there has to be separation between men and women. So anyway, this is a big issue which I'm not going to get into now, but I'm just saying that in the name of following Srila Prabhupada, different people come up with different interpretations, and they'll all say that we are following Prabhupada. And the very fact that there is Ritvik Vad and what we call Guru, or what may be called Guru Vad or Guru Tattva Vad, that shows that there is a difference in understanding Prabhupada. And the fact that we're discussing this, and people may be confused and they need someone to guide them and they have to use the intelligence to understand who is fit to properly guide them, means that we can't understand these issues simply by ourselves. We need someone to guide us. And if someone guides you to say, well, you just read Prabhupada's books and understand, then again the point is, if you just read Prabhupada's books, you'll never find Ritvikism in a million years. It's just not there. It's an imposition which has come afterwards. So that point is there, that they are also interpreting Srila Prabhupada. And instructing others, this is the way you should understand Srila Prabhupada. But by doing that, they're taking the position of an acharya. So what is in the beginning I was saying there's not that much difference, because the gurus and iskandas say we're initiated on behalf of Prabhupada. And the Ritvigvadi said, well, we are more honest because we don't claim that we're perfect or that we're qualified to say to Krishna. But the difference is that the Ritvig priest, in their proposed system, the Ritvig priest initiates on behalf of Srila Prabhupada. He takes no responsibility for the disciple. It's just a job. It's just like, you know, someone cleans it. You go to the toilet, someone cleaned it before you came. So it's just a function that someone does to make life better for you. You could clean the toilets out there. Be a good idea. I mean, people who use them would kindly put some water down there after they use it. It would be more pleasant for others coming, as a digression. So, in the same way, a Ritvik priest, according to them, he just does a job. He does the sacrifice, and then you become a disciple of Prabhupada. Of course, the disciple is supposed, the prospective disciple is supposed to be accepted by the guru. It's not that you can decide for him. Anyone else can decide for him who's going to be his disciple. And the guru gives the name. So, but that's done by the Ritvik priests in their system. But they don't take, afterwards, but they don't take any responsibility for the disciples' spiritual growth. They say, okay, you're initiated. Now it's between you and Prabhupada. There's no guidance. So it's quite cruel, actually, to say that, well, you know, it's just, you're on your own, and there you are, you take it. And they also deny the sweet relationship between gurus and disciples. It's just a license for independence to think, well, you can just do whatever you like. And practically it means you have no spiritual authority. You just, you know, whatever you think is improper, what Prabhupada says, that's it for you. It's just an, then where is the guru actually? Someone, often people say, you know, well, Prabhupada, I feel he's instructing me, and I'm getting this inspiration from Prabhupada. I'll give an example of this. Someone was writing to me some letters, and they're saying, well, they have so many problems in their life, and they don't know what to do, and they wish they'd got married, but it's very late in their life, and they don't know what to do now. So they're asking me for advice. And I said to them, look, this problem, you can't overcome them all. You don't have much time in your life left. I suggest you just completely dedicate your life to distributing Srila Prabhupada's books. And the reply I got was, how could you say that? You don't understand me. It's not my nature. I was so upset. And I went and prayed before Prabhupada that watch, you know, I'm so upset that he gave me this advice. And Prabhupada told me, kick him in the head. That person should kick me in the head. So I'm writing you this letter, which is on Prabhupada's order. I'm insulting you and this and that. But anyone who knows anything about Prabhupada knows that if you advise someone to dedicate your life to distributing his books, he wouldn't be upset. He'd be very pleased. So it's their imagination that Prabhupada said this, because they don't... The point is that you can just imagine, according to what you think is right, your own interpretation of Krishna consciousness and say, well, that's how Prabhupada's inspiring me. And you don't actually submit to anyone. Where is the surrender? Where is the practical surrender? You don't have anyone to take instructions from personally. Do this, don't do this. You know, forget about, you know, Bhagavad Gita philosophy. Who's going to teach people to eat with their right hands? For instance, to turn cell phones. I mean, it's a basic thing that if you come to a satsanga, you shouldn't have your cell phone on. You should have the presence of mind to turn it off. But even if you tell people 3-4 times, still they'll leave it on and disturb the whole satsang. And then if I say, oh, so nasty, but Someone should tell you. Like I say, forget about this high philosophy. First of all, who's going to train you how to be a human being and act in a considerate manner and not disturb everyone else because you can't be bothered to turn your cell phone off? Who's going to be heavy and if everyone's equal and, you know, we're all disciples of Prabhupada and probably, I don't see anywhere it says in Prabhupada's books that you shouldn't have your cell phone on in the class. See, it's not in Prabhupada's books. How can you say? You're not following Prabhupada. That's what people say. I asked someone once who was supposed to be a disciple of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati. I was in his house, he was drinking tea. I said, how come you're drinking tea? He said, there's nothing in Shastra against it. I said, what's the harm? There isn't anything in Shastra, because when nothing in Hari Bhakti Vilas. When Sanatana Goswami and Gopal Bhatta Goswami were compiling Hari Bhakti Vilas, there was no tea in India. The later Acharyas gave this. But then if you think, I'll go directly to Sanatana Goswami, he didn't say anything against it. So why is your Prabhupada saying anything against it? Who's he? I understand Sanatana Goswami better than Prabhupada. It's just his opinion. And I can take Sanatana Goswami's opinion. And you know, I can go directly to Sanatana Goswami. I don't need any Prabhupada. You know, he's just, you know, he's an ordinary person. So like that, so many things will come up. You won't find in any Shastra that you should turn your cell phone off before you come to a satsang. Who's going to tell you? You may say it's not the highest spiritual principle, but it is a spiritual principle. These are the kind of things that disciples need to be trained in. It's not all about talking about very high philosophy but in every detail. One has to be trained. For that you need a guru. And that relationship, for those who are prepared to submit themselves to it. Not everyone is. Many people want a picture on the wall as a guru. They just want a picture on the wall, they wave some incense, they give him 1,000 rupees when he comes. And they say, Jai Guru Dev, and they don't follow any damn thing he says. And he says, well, whenever I come, he smiles at me. So he loves me and he approves everything. They don't want a guru. So, you can keep the picture of Prabhupada on your wall and say, well, I don't need any of these gurus. My gurus, you know, you got that guy as a guru, I got Prabhupada as my guru, you see. But, you don't have any authority. So, yeah, as I was saying, that it might seem that the whole idea of having a guru is illogical. This Krishna can't decide, he relies on his logic. But it is the system instituted by Krishna himself, and no amount of logic can deny that. Why did Krishna do that? We can't understand with our logic why Krishna... Well, one reason, it's very simple to understand that we can't direct, even though we are part and parcel of Krishna, we are removed from him by our own rebelliousness against Krishna, and we have to be trained to become fit to go to Krishna. So it's not just by logic that we can understand everything. Then again, you don't need a guru. You can just logically interpret. But logic itself, tarka apatishta, shutiyo vibhinna, nasav rishya yasya matang nabhinnam, dharmasya tatvang nihitam guhayam, mahajano yenagata sapanta. Nothing can be established by argument alone. Because someone will say something, establish a position, and someone else who's stronger in logic will come along and defeat it. And even the Shastras say different things. Apparently. They say different things. And all the Rishis say different things, and that's what a Rishi means. They're all trying to show who's a better Rishi than everyone else. You can't be a Rishi unless you disagree with every other Rishi. So dharmasya tattvam, the truth of dharma, is within the hearts of the Mahajans. Therefore one has to find a Mahajan and follow them. Now you may say, well, who's a Mahajan? Shastra gives general indication, but according to our taste, someone may feel Hiranyakashipu is a Mahajan. Someone finds Einstein is a Mahajan. So again, it depends on our sincerity, just like we were reading about Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, how he attempted to establish Mayavad by Vitanga, Chal, Nigraha, not searching for the truth. There's a term Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur used to use. Satyanu Sandhana Sandhitsu means one who is inquisitive and eager to find the truth. So if we're simply interested in establishing our position is correct, then we may be good at logic, but we won't arrive at the truth, because we're more interested in establishing our position than finding the truth. So we have to follow our Mahajan. It requires sincerity. We find that Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, he was not sincere in arguing with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. No Mayavadi is sincere. When Prabhupada was asked, what if an atheist is sincere? And Prabhupada said, it's like saying an honest thief. If you're sincere, then you're not an atheist. It may seem that people are very committed and convinced, but that is not sincerity. If you're committed and convinced for the wrong thing, then you're simply a rascal. That's not sincerity. You may be highly committed. We could learn from Hitler the example of commitment. He was so committed, and that was a major factor in him developing his movement. But he was a great demon. Hiranyakashipu was intensely committed to conquering the universe, and he undertook severe austerities. He was extremely committed, but we can't call him sincere because he was not interested in the truth. He was interested in his own self-interest. So, well, another argument of the Ritvigvadis is, you see, we may say, well, we have to follow sadhu, shastra and guru. And you're saying that Prabhupada just introduced this system which is not according to shastra. And they'll say, well, Prabhupada changed so many things. He's a great acharya, he could change so many things. In this way, they demonstrate their pathetic ignorance of the principles of bhakti tattva. That no one, you can change, or details can be adjusted, but not principles. It's just like someone may be teaching about bhakti, and they say that, well, we worship Krishna. This is what the Mayavadis do. They have bhakti also. But they change something. They're a little different to the Vaishnava Acharyas. They also worship Krishna. They chant the names of Krishna. But they say that ultimately Krishna is impersonal. So they say, well, they just made a little change, but the change is devastating. It destroys bhakti. So Prabhupada did some unprecedented things. He gave Brahma Gayatri to spirit souls in women's bodies, normally known as women. He allowed women to live in the ashram. It's unprecedented. But he didn't change any principles. So it is a principle of spiritual life that we have to surrender to Krishna through guru. And you may say, well, so many gurus fell down, and therefore Prabhupada couldn't have wanted his disciples to be gurus. Prabhupada knew how neophyte and fallen his disciples were, so he couldn't have wanted them to be gurus. He wouldn't have made such a mistake. Prabhupada was perfect, so why did he make such a mistake as to allow people who are conditioned souls to be gurus? Well, for that matter, Srila Prabhupada initiated many sannyasis who fell down. He initiated so many people as brahmanas who fell down, and brahmanas, persons initiated as brahmanas in ISKCON, so many fall down that we take it as just normal. But actually for a brahmana to fall down from his vows is it's a very severe infringement of the principles of spiritual life to accept the brahminical initiation and then go back to eating meat, or in the West especially, this is quite common. So, or to give up bhakti altogether. This is very severe. But Prabhupada, he didn't stop initiating or say, Prabhupada, seeing so many of his disciples fall down, he could have said that, okay, let's just stop. It's impossible. These people can't become devotees, so let's stop initiating altogether. Let's stop initiating Brahmins, let's stop initiating sannyasis. No one can ever become a Brahmana. We've seen that so many fell down, and even those who didn't fall down, all these Westerners, they don't know any Sanskrit, they pronounce it all wrongly, and even all the Indians, they don't know any Sanskrit. So how can they be Brahmins? How can they be disciples? Disciple means you have to, traditionally, in the Vedic tradition, disciple means the first thing you learn is Sanskrit. Gurukul is traditionally known as a place where you learn Sanskrit. And if you don't know Sanskrit, you're a mlecha. That's the original definition of the word mlecha, one who doesn't know Sanskrit. So how can they be disciples if they're mlechas? But Prabhupada didn't think like that. We could say, well, Prabhupada made a mistake by initiating so many people. And actually Prabhupada himself said that. If you want to quote Prabhupada directly, Prabhupada said, my only mistake was that I initiated so many unqualified people. You want to take that at face value? You want to say that it was a mistake? Then none of us have any hope, because if Prabhupada hadn't initiated us, then if he hadn't taken the risk, then there wouldn't be no worldwide Hare Krishna movement, there would be no gurus, there would be no preaching, there would... So, the argument that, well, Prabhupada couldn't have wanted that because Prabhupada, he wouldn't be such a fool as to make gurus out of people who weren't qualified. Well, then you could say that about Prabhupada himself, initiating and making disciples out of unqualified people. So even a brahmana, they're called bhudev. They're supposed to be like gods, but Prabhupada gave initiation to people who, Allen Ginsberg, he had been to India, and he came to America, he's from America, he came back to India. So he went to India, came back, and he saw Indian Brahmins, and he met Prabhupada, and Prabhupada said, and Allen Ginsberg said, are you going to make these people devotees? And disciples? Prabhupada said, yes, and I'm going to make them brahmanas. And Allen Ginsberg was astonished. How can these people be brahmanas? But Prabhupada knew that the intrinsic meaning of a brahmana is a devotee of Krishna. So he went on with that faith. And the intrinsic meaning of a guru is one who delivers the science of Krishna consciousness in parampara. And actually, if the followers of Srila Prabhupada stick to what Srila Prabhupada says, then Krishna consciousness will be transmitted. And it is going on. And even though there have been many problems with gurus in ISKCON, still so many people are coming and accepting gurus within ISKCON because they're getting something substantial. And as a matter of fact, we find from Chaitanya Bhagavat and Narahari Sarkar's Krishna Bhajanamrita that even just after the disappearance of Srila Prabhupada from this world, there were so many problems in the Sampradaya. There were many gurus who they gave initiation and they deviated. We can deduce this from that. But that doesn't mean that anyone ever proposed that the system of there being gurus and disciples stop. We may say, well, their whole line of preaching is that there are so many problems in ISKCON. That's true. There are problems in ISKCON, but Ritvikism isn't the solution. To point out that there are problems and say, hey, this is it, that doesn't necessarily mean it's a solution. They say that we should just make Prabhupada the only guru in ISKCON, and then there will be unity, but the Ritvik can be split up among themselves already. So where's the unity? Even like the Pope of Ritvikism, or the Acharya of Ritvikism, this Krishna Kant, he rejects Madhu Pandit. They were together for a little time and then they fell out. And even Krishna Kant says that Madhu Pandit is using the Ritvikism, but he's just using that to promote his own business empire. So why, again, what's the problem? Why, if there's no great difference, we say that we're, ISKCON gurus say we're initiating on behalf of Prabhupada, then why don't we just call ourselves Ritviks and solve the problem? Or the Ritviks saying they could just call themselves, the Ritvik bodies could just say, call themselves gurus with a slightly different definition and we'll just solve the problem. After all, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu ordered all his followers to become a guru. So the Ritvik bodies say that means that you should become a Shiksha guru and not a Diksha guru. And in Prabhupada's purport to Madhyalila, verse 130, which comes just after that famous verse, Amarangyai Guru Hoya Tara Edesh, become a guru and deliver this land. There is a statement that it is best not to accept any disciples. It's in Prabhupada's purport. I got the original transcript of this, and there are mistakes in Prabhupada's books made by his editors, especially in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, which was a rush job. And actually that should say it is best not, because Prabhupada dictated and then the transcribers heard it and typed it and then they edited. That should be, it is best not to accept many disciples, not any disciples. One letter makes a lot of difference. So, alright. And the actual result of this preaching is don't accept a guru, only Prabhupada's your guru, is that many people, what actually happens here in Bangalore, as you know, that 300 rupee fine. No, you're not going to do it because you're not my disciples. When I'm only with my disciples and forces, 300 rupee fine. But you're not my disciples. You're not committed to me, so you don't have to do what I say. You can do whatever you like. You can come and listen and say that was very nice, or you can say it's not very nice, and then you can do whatever you damn well like because you have no commitment. You can do it right now also. So, of course, the disciples often do whatever they damn well like also, so there's not much meaning to being a disciple, if you like that. So, where's that next point? Yeah, the actual result of this is that, this Ritvik Vada is actually very dry and it's more based on negative principles. And it's based on, say, all the ISKCON gurus are all bogus and they're all useless and they're all in Maya. What actually happens is that, well, people, if they read the books of Prabhupada and they think, well, actually I should have a guru because that's what Prabhupada says. You should, and they end up going to the Gaudiya Math, who also criticizes ISKCON. That's their main line of preaching, is that all the ISKCON gurus are useless and you have to go to the Gaudiya Math. They're on a higher level. So that's what happened. Actually, they drive people away from Prabhupada in the name of Prabhupadaism, fanatical Prabhupadaism. Another example of fanatical Prabhupadaism is they insist on distributing this old edition of the Bhagavad Gita as it is here in Bangalore, which has a line in it, and in the verse, Arya, what is that? Pitrinam Aryamas Chasmi. Among the Pitris, I am Aryama. So, in the purport and the original edition, it stated, there is a planet of the trees. Actually, it should be Pitris, but because again, the transcriber, they never heard of a Pitri, so they put trees, the planet of the trees. And they said, no, this is Prabhupada's Bhagavad Gita. Prabhupada said, there's a planet of trees, and they think maybe Lord Brahma has to create a planet of trees or something, because Prabhupada said it. And they're distributing this here in Bangalore, where there are so many Vedic pundits. And as a result of their fanaticism, they actually, what they are propagating is that, what are people supposed to think when they read this? Either they'll think that Prabhupada was a fool. I'm sorry to say that, but that's actually what you would think. Or you'll think that Prabhupada's disciples are all fools. He wasn't able to instruct his disciples because they misunderstood and they couldn't correct. It's not Prabhupada's mistake. Prabhupada didn't say that. It's the foolishness of his disciples. And if in the name of Prabhupada you propagate foolishness, what kind of a disciple is that? So, it's just fanaticism, actually. Fanatically. But the actual result is that people don't establish their relationship with Prabhupada. And they say, well, so many people are leaving ISKCON, they don't call that ISKCON, they're leaving the official ISKCON and joining Ritvikism. But actually, many people, they come out of Ritvikism and they want a guru in ISKCON, or they go to the Gauriya Math. They come out of Ritvikism being dissatisfied. So it's not that Ritvikism is the panacea for everything. It's not that it's the world-conquering logic by which everything will be cured. Of course, I was initiated by Srila Prabhupada, and so I don't have to think of all these things myself, and whether I should accept Ritvik initiation from Prabhupada, or accept initiation from one of Prabhupada's disciples, or accept initiation from the Gauriya Math. But if I had to make the choice between an ISKCON guru and a Gauriya Math guru, and even if the Gauriya Math gurus, you know, they may be very learned in Shastra, and they may be very, you know, they may come from very high class families, and they may have very long beards and be very old and very Indian. And the ISKCON gurus, they may not be Indian and they may not have long beards and they may not be as learned in Shastra. But personally, I'd rather take shelter in someone who's got a clear connection with Srila Prabhupada than anyone, however rasik they may be. I'd rather just follow, get that connection with Srila Prabhupada. And well, there are many other points. I'll just make one more as it's getting late. But you see that the Ritvikvadis, they accuse the ISKCON gurus of personal motivation. You see, they just want to cheat people for their own honor and prestige, and they get lots of money. Personally, I see that the gurus in ISKCON are working hard to spread Krishna consciousness. They take a lot of trouble to do so. And we may say, well, you know, I'm just motivated because I want to fool you all for my own personal aggrandizement. But then we have to ask why devotees like Shyamasundara Prabhu, who's sitting here, and many other disciples of Srila Prabhupada, by this I mean they're actually initiated by Srila Prabhupada, not some imaginary. You meet people and say, Who's your guru? And say, Prabhupada. And how old are you? 22. When did Prabhupada... So how did that happen, actually? I mean, I'm a genuine disciple of Srila Prabhupada. I mean, the initiation date, the name, it was all clearly initiated by Prabhupada. You don't have to make any philosophical or so-called logical discussion. He is definitely a disciple of Srila Prabhupada. And he doesn't have any position in ISKCON. I mean, not like GBC, Guru, Temple President. He doesn't have anything to gain personally in terms of money or prestige from ISKCON. So why would he, I'm just giving him as an example because there are many others. He just happens to be sitting here at the present time. Why should he support this Guru Vad? Maybe, you know, out of the millions of dollars of Dakshina, I'm giving him some backhanded payments. Well, you could suspect that if you like. It's not a very good thesis, but why does he support it when he has got... If you say that this, people are becoming gurus out of personal motivation, then why would others who have absolutely nothing to gain from that, who are practicing Krishna consciousness very seriously for many years and are supposed to be learned and fixed in Shastra, why should they support it? Well, maybe Chamasundara Prabhu could give the whole lecture and again and say why. But just because it's not just out of personal, it cannot be only out of personal motivation. And there are many devotees like, and in fact, if we see, I don't find in the Ritvik camp anyone who's been ever known in our society as a philosopher among them, but we find in the non-Ritvik camp, Dravida Prabhu, who's not initiating, who's the editor for Prabhupada's books since Prabhupada was personally present. Gopi Puranadana Prabhu, by far the most traditionally scholarly disciple of Srila Prabhupada. And all of them, who are persons who are intelligent and philosophical and have studied Prabhupada's books very deeply, you won't find any of them in the Ritvik camp. Bhanuswami is another example. He doesn't initiate himself, although many people would like to take initiation from him. And you know, it's just not an issue with them. It's because it militates against everything in Shastra and in tradition. So, Hare Krishna. That's enough from me for tonight. And Shamasana Prabhu definitely wants to say something.
Did you make the point about that time?
Well, at the beginning I said I'm not going to take up every point, I'm just going to say some. If you just follow Jesus, they often offer the example of Jesus, that yes, that you're a disciple. Yes, Jesus is your guru.
But Srila Prabhupada also said he hasn't met any Christians yet. He met many priests, many cardinals, prophets. He said he had yet to meet a Christian. But they had no guru. They weren't following Jesus.
Yeah. So many points. One point is, just like for instance, there is a person, a well-known person in the city called Madhu Pandit Das, who claims himself to be a disciple of Srila Prabhupada. Who gave him that name? Who gave him that name? Does anyone know? You all know, right?
Yeah.
The name was given by Jayaprataka Maharaj. And at the time he gave the name, it was done with the full understanding that this person is becoming a disciple of Jayaprataka Maharaj. And later, he decided, actually I got initiated by Prabhupada. He presents himself as a disciple of Prabhupada. It's cheating. Yeah, anything else? All right. Hare Krishna. They often say these people that there's the from the official ISKCON side, they don't reply. Yeah, as I said at the beginning of the lecture, I think we should discuss these things more often, because just like Vaishnavs traditionally discuss Mayavad and the fallacies of it, because it is something which misleads many people. So this is misleading people and we should discuss it. But at the same time, one thing in the Gaudiya Vaishnava tradition, devotees are not very much interested in debate as in traditional Vedanta tradition. This is mentioned by Sanatana Goswami in his Brihad Bhagavatamrita commentary. We're not interested in the logical debate, trying to establish one point. Not in the same. We can reply if there are certain arguments, but in and of itself, we're not interested in logical debate. We're interested in serving Krishna. So we may not enter into so many fine, detailed points of, you know, trying to understand what interpreting this word and that word and another word. There's also another thing said that this is not from Shastra, this is common sense, it's an English saying, that don't discuss with a fool because other people may not know the difference. So if you may not want to take them too seriously. We have to take them seriously because they're misleading people, but their philosophy, or if you can call it a philosophy, in and of itself it stinks. I mean, it's not philosophically viable. So we may not want to get into all the... That has been done, actually. There have been devotees who got into... They're just fine points and interpretation of words. This word henceforward means this. But like I say, just by entering into analysis of words, nahi nahi rakshati dukrin karane, it's simply by logical analysis. You don't get the mercy. There's no bliss in there. There's no bliss. So we should have lots of kirtan and praise Krishna and praise Srila Prabhupada. And if you do that, then we'll go to Krishna. That's all. But we have to be properly guided also. So shall we finish there? You have something to say. Yeah.
Thank you very much, Maharaj, for speaking so vividly on the subject. I was wondering if it would be appropriate at this time to also touch upon Narayan Maharaj.
Well, I did, obliquely. You turned out Narayan Maharaj. So obliquely I spoke about that. That people... I said that myself, if I had the choice, I'd rather be connected to someone who's very directly and clearly to teaching as Prabhupada taught. So, Narayan Maharaj, he claims to have a close relationship with Prabhupada, but his teachings are in many ways quite different, and his practices are quite different. So they say that, well, actually this is just the same, but it's in the same spirit. I don't know exactly what they say, but from what I can see, it is quite a different mood, and even the teachings and the... It is different from what Prabhupada... I mean, what we are supposed to be teaching in ISKCON is very clearly based on Prabhupada's books, what we could call a very down-to-earth, realistic approach. Because certain Gauriya gurus are presented as being on a very high platform because of, they speak of rasa tattva. But Prabhupada was merciful enough to speak on the level that we need to hear. Just like, I don't think there's much point in speaking on rasa tattva to people who, even if you tell them three times to kindly turn off their cell phone, they can't get it together to do that. They don't even have enough, you know, basic human etiquette. So, the basic point, the last time I had personal darshan of Srila Prabhupada was in October 1977, which turned out to be almost exactly 1 month before he passed away from our mortal vision. At this time, Prabhupada was about to take some prasad, which I learned later was the first time in months. And Prabhupada sat up and he started to sharira vidyajal. And Prabhupada spoke about how we have to control the mind and the senses and the tongue. Prabhupada was speaking what we needed to hear. So it's not that because you get a rasic guru that you can take a quick high jump into rasa tattva. Prabhupada was certainly aware of and fully absorbed in the higher rasas of bhakti. Out of his mercy, he taught us step by step as we needed to hear. And actually, it's actually all nonsense, just talking all the very, very high things to very, very neophyte people. It's not benefiting them. But people like to think, you know, I'm so qualified, I don't need all this, you know, Bhagavad Gita and, I feel love in my heart for Radharani. So, everyone gets what they want. Some of my disciples have gone to certain Gauriya Math gurus, and when this first time they're always upset. Nowadays not so much, because, you know, ultimately everyone gets what they want. If I'm properly representing Srila Prabhupada and then Parampara, and if people properly want to follow me, then they will get the result of going to Krishna. In that way I can say I am taking people to Krishna. And if people want to imagine that they are gopis, then they can imagine. According to what I have understood from our Parampara Acharyas, they're not going to go to Krishna. Srila Gaurakishore Das Babaji Maharaj said that people who artificially meditate on gopis when they're not ready for that, they're not on that level, they end up taking birth as mundane women. That's all. You don't become a gopi. You don't know what a gopi is. So you are thinking of gopis, but you don't know what a gopi is. So your conception is a mundane conception. So actually you're thinking of mundane women. Anyway, I won't go into this in more detail. Like I say, everyone gets what they want. So if you're attracted to that, well, I would say that in one sense it's good, and that you have, it's better than being a total atheist and having no connection with Krishna or no inclination to Krishna. But on the other hand, I'm convinced that if we follow what Prabhupada gave us, that we will achieve the best ultimate perfection of life, and that is my duty as a guru. I have the audacity, or I have the faith in Prabhupada that if I take the position of a guru in his service, and if I simply try to deliver what he has delivered, then by his mercy everyone will achieve the highest perfection of life. So like I say, if I was in your position, if I would go to someone who is very clearly and without any sleight of hand or word jugglery following Srila Prabhupada, it's up to you. Everyone has to make their choice. Someone has an alarm clock going off? Whatever. So, shall we finish there? Now? Another question? No? Yeah. Sometime you went before you went to Mayapur. Very good. You're very fortunate.
Something is about from local Ramji business here to them, that why are they going to other side? Mahaprabhu's
birthday. Why are they going to the other side? Well, look, we can't deal with every objection or doubt in this lecture. This is not the subject of this lecture. That's another whole different topic. So, Hare Krishna. We'll finish there. Alright, yeah.
Can I make a request?
Yeah.
Now, given the situation we are in, it would be very nice if you visit here more often and spend more time in the
country. Thank you for inviting me to come. Let's see if I can come. The thing is that although some people hate the sannyasis in ISKCON, there are others who like them. Even nasty sannyasis like me. I mean, they're not that many who are as nasty as me. Jai Vedaswami is more nasty than me. So I'm told. Hope I don't get a nasty phone call from him. No, but his nastiness, you see, that's his kindness. So, problem that all ISKCON sannyasis are facing is that they only have one body. And their bodies are asked to be in many places at the same time. And they're, as I was saying, even nasty or not very appealing person like myself, I get far more invitations to visit devotees than I can possibly fulfill. So there is a demand for gurus in ISKCON, even the nasty ones, and let's see what I can do. I'd like to preach more in Bangalore because it is a very good place for preaching Krishna consciousness. Actually, the whole world is a good place, but Bangalore is very good and very nice. At the same time, I have a personal dilemma that I have a very strong urge to write books because I'm not going to be in this body very long, and I want to put things systematically into books. So I'm trying to cut down my travel and write more books, and at the same time I'd love to come and spend more time here and preach. So what am I going to do? And you'll say, oh, just come here and you just give a few classes and we'll arrange everything quietly and you can write. And that's what they all say. And whenever you go to a place, you never get any peace and you can't write any books. So the only way I can write books usually is to do something which I don't really like to do, which is to go away from ISKCON centers, a long way away, and not give anyone any phone number. And then I can get some chance to do some writing. But anyway, let's see. I was thinking, I have a flight book from Delhi to Bangalore in early May. I was planning to be here 2 days and then go to Salem. And maybe I'll come, let's see. Thank you so much for your kind offer. Hare Krishna Maharaj, we know that chanting of the holy name of Lord Krishna is the yoga dharma, the only means of doing it. Does the holy name act on Ritvik bodies? Because we also see them chanting blissfully. How far does the holy name act on them? What benefits do they get by chanting? Will they gradually be led to the genuine process of Krishna consciousness? How genuine is their process of deity worship and devotional service? Well, in deity worship, the first thing is to worship the Guru. So, unless they have... Right? Pujari? In puja, before you do puja to the deity, you have to worship your guru. So if your link with your guru isn't properly fixed up, then your link with Krishna isn't properly fixed up. Chanting the holy name, that will always be beneficial. Even offensive chanting, which has many bad side effects. We didn't quite finish the class yet. And you'll smile. I'm not smiling. What do you have to do? How many times did I say in this class? 10 times at least. And still, people can't do that little thing of reaching in their pocket and turning their cell phone off. So, yeah, there'll be benefit from chanting. But unless one is properly situated, then you won't get the full benefit in the proper way. Ashraya loya, what is that? Ashraya loya bhaje, Krishna tare nahi taje. Narottam Das says that one who takes shelter, Krishna doesn't reject them. So they may feel that they're sheltered by Prabhupada, but we understand that something very seriously wrong in their understanding. They're chanting blissfully, it may be. Is that real bliss? We have to see. I've seen complete sahajiyas chanting totally bogus mantras, jumping up and down like they were in complete ecstasy. And they may have felt they're in ecstasy. And they may feel that they're having the bliss of bhakti, but what is their connection with Krishna? We have to understand through Siddhanta. So we can understand that they're not properly situated. And according to their level of sincerity, Krishna will reciprocate with them. And I'm going to finish now. No more questions tonight. Hare Krishna. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.